It's time for ESPN Las Vegas legal insider Justin Watkins with Battleborn Injury Lawyers, only on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
All right, here we go. 4 o'clock hour, you heard it. Battleborn Broadcast Center. Every day, 4 o'clock hour is presented by Battleborn Injury Lawyers, 766-1400. Got to dial 775 in the north. Welcome in Reno. Adam Hill is here as a company. What's going on, buddy?
Good to be back.
I like the list today. I like the list you sent over. I don't know that we're going to do a whole lot of WNBA, but listen, you asked for it. You got it! We're getting to it. But this is the week, I'm correct, that the A's start giving out some more details, right? We're waiting for this for a couple of months?
Yes.
Okay, so as I threw in the joke, will Steve Hill be presenting to Steve Hill? Probably not.
Probably not.
Yes. Do you want to explain that scenario?
Well, I mean, Steve Hill and Jeremy Aguero, neither of whom have to register as lobbyists, presented the bill that got the funding for the A Stadium in the Nevada legislature. And Steve Hill is on the stadium authority, which should be on the opposite side of the negotiation on stadium agreement details than the A's. And Jeremy Aguero is not on the board, but is typically hired by the stadium authority to do any sort of financial analysis and by the Las Vegas Convention Center. So, you know, my hopes are not very high that we've got a great deal on our hands. It will be interesting, though, no matter how bad everybody wants it to be accomplished, The bonding had very strict guidelines on those projections and how the bonding could be funded. And the A's initial take on it of we want 8 games that we can play not at home affects the bonding. So I don't know what they're going to come at. They have to come up with something. They can't just say, okay, yes, we give the A's 8 games away. They cannot just say that without addressing the bonding. The bonding number either has to go down, a corresponding basically 10%, 9%, or there has to be some other method of baseball games. They cannot use anything other than baseball games of the A's to address the funding shortfall that would be there to support the bonding. So that's an interesting aspect. Simultaneously, I thought it was interesting. There was a Supreme Court ruling. There is a challenge to the funding bill itself on constitutional grounds saying that it did not meet the 2/3 supermajority requirement for new taxes and new funding. The state is taking the position that it is not new taxes, it's not new revenue, it is bonding, which is different. I'm going to say it's a case of first impression for the Nevada Supreme Court. There have been other bills that have gotten through like this, but have not been challenged. The A's sought to intervene into that lawsuit to say, hey, we are a party of interest, we can provide some context, we can argue on this, and the Supreme Court said, no, we don't need you here. This has got nothing to do with you. We understand the state wants is trying to protect your interest and the bill and backing the bill. So we don't need you here gumming up the works. Your profitability has nothing to do with any of this.
Why do I have the feeling that, as you said, the 8-game issue has to be addressed? Why do I have the feeling that it won't?
It has to. I mean, even Steve Hill acknowledged that as soon as that story came out. They acknowledged, and Jeremy Aguero both acknowledged, well, the bonding has to be addressed. It cannot be bonded for the full amount if 9% of the games or 9.5% of the games are taken off the schedule. Because, as you'll remember, what I think to be the most absurd projection...
They have to sell out every game for the 20 entire, years. Entirety of the deal.
Sell out every single game, every single seat for 20 straight years... 81 games plus preseason.
No, they don't even have preseason.
Well, any like exhibition, right. any game that they plan on playing there.
Well, is that what they'll do? Is that and because you won't sell out preseason, by the way.
Right.
Usually you train in Arizona.
Right.
Will they just say, well, whatever games are on the schedule that aren't in Las Vegas, we will move a preseason game here?
They might.
Well, that's garbage.
It is garbage.
Because they're not going to sell out a preseason game. And if they do, it's not going to be at the same prices.
Let's be honest. The whole deal is garbage. Okay, fair. You know, like, I mean, if that – I still think there are so many hurdles to be cleared here that even with the stadium agreement in place – let's assume they get the agreement in place, which they have to. They have deadlines that they have to meet. If they don't meet this – let's see. I think that deadline will expire, was it 6 months from the passing? So it's like August something, maybe September, that they have to have an agreement in place that includes no relocation. And if they don't, then they have not met the preconditions of the bill. Wow. So they would have to go back to the legislature and try to get something different, new terms. And according to the bill, it has to be at this site. They did not allow, you'll recall, the Raiders one did not require a specific site. This one did. That's the only way it got the votes, was part of this specific site. And I think, as we know, Bally's has got its own problems to deal with here. And that could, I don't know, that could throw a wrench into this whole thing.
We're talking about the A's to Las Vegas. By the way, the path to get to Las Vegas is not all going smoothly either. They decided to play in the interim once they're out of Oakland next year in Sacramento. And looky, looky, Sacramento and the A's haven't really worked out all the details. Sound familiar? So Tony Clark, the head of the MLPA, with, you know, the recent heat wave, maybe he didn't know about Sacramento. Sacramento gets hot as Hades.
Yep.
And there's like, I swear, it's one of the only places on earth where there's, I feel like there's never a breeze there. Tony Clark's like, yeah, what are we doing in the extreme heat? Apparently there's a turf issue. Yep. I mean, the stadium is certainly not up to Major League Baseball standards. So Tony Clark's like, you know what? In excessive heat, we might have to look into morning games. What?
Yeah. I mean, it's just, if anybody had any delusions in thinking that this ownership group was going to be different here, it's a systemic issue. I mean, they are a poorly run franchise.
It's only been money. That's all they needed.
Yeah.
No. And a new stadium. Everything's going to be good. Nope. You know, it's not even honestly. You watch Bar Rescue with Taffer?
Yeah.
Every time I watch it, Taffer's screaming and yelling at the people. Like, a couple of people might get fired, but the owners aren't going to fire themselves.
Yep.
And you see how many places, and I don't think it's Taffer's fault, so many places, like, the failure rate after he leaves is like 35%, because the same jabronis just have, you know, some lipstick on the same pig.
Look at the Arizona Coyotes. It's the same thing. I mean, they have now officially lost their franchise. They're, you know, it could have been installed as a franchise, because Utah is technically an expansion franchise. They had to meet some certain deadlines. They didn't meet the first deadline. And they didn't meet the first deadline because the Arizona politicians pulled it off of their board, or off of their agenda, because they had warned Alex Moreno's office, hey, on a dozen different occasions, you have to do these red tape issues. You have to go get this study. You have to do these things. Otherwise, we cannot. We are precluded from putting it on the agenda and voting for it. We will vote for it, but you've got to do these things. And they didn't do those things. And it just feels like there's so many hurdles here that they still have to clear. And the first hurdle they barely cleared. Maybe, and the Supreme Court may say that they didn't clear it. I don't know. I've got no knowledge one way or the other on that. But they have so many additional hurdles to clear, and it just seems like they barely cleared the first one, and they are stumbling into the second and third.
By the way, do we have any idea when that ruling could come?
I don't.
I mean, okay. When do they make decisions? Like, when do they're in session now?
No, so the Nevada Supreme Court always is.
Okay.
It's a full-time body. Okay. So, you know, there's going to be some hearings, there's going to be some arguments, there's going to be some briefing. I don't know. I mean, I think based on prior precedent, 6 to 9 months.
Total guess. Can things be done in the interim? Like, are they going to have to? Is the Supreme Court going to tell them like you can't make any decisions going forward until we make a decision?
Well, that would
is that, that is that, that is that possible?
Is that a possible thing that could happen in a case like in a case similar to this?
Yeah, and sorry, I misquoted. The ruling about the intervention was, I believe, by the First Judicial District Court, which is in Carson City, but then everything gets appealed to the Supreme Court. I mean, let's talk generally speaking.
In general cases.
Yes, in general cases, can a court maintain the status quo? Yes, that's when they put in place injunctive orders. That's all really an injunction really is that everything stops. We're going to maintain everything as it currently is until we have an opportunity to rule, because if we wait to rule and things change, our ruling can become ineffective, right? I'm not aware of any sort of motions or anything in place in that case that would make me think that's going to happen.
Justin Watkins here at the Battle Warren Broadcast Center. It's Cofield and Company, Adam and Cofield. All right, our weekly WNBA conversation. Every week there's a new reason that the Angel Reese fans are pissed and the Caitlin Clark fans are pissed. And let's start with Angel Reese. Her double-double streak stopped. I think it was, 17 games?
Yeah.
And, she's going for it at the end because she's trying to get the points. And they lock down on defense. Like, no, you're not keeping this streak going against us. Angel Reese fans are mad.
Well, and the funny part about that, well, they shouldn't be mad. I mean, she played a terrible game.
Okay.
A terrible game. Okay. She was 3-for-13 from the field. She missed at least 6 layups, 4 of which she rebounded herself. Or that's four rebounds of her own.
Right.
And then either did not put it back in or didn't score. So she was 3-for-13. And at the end there, her teammates were trying to get her the ball, gave her a couple open looks for jumpers that she did not make or come anywhere close to. So then they tried to get it inside, and Liberty were like, no. They brought all of the big people. They quadruple teamed her there at the end, and she didn't get it up.
Why do they hate her so much?
Why does who hate who?
Liberty.
I wouldn't let her get the double-double streak either. I mean, Liberty had won the game. They were up by double digits, and clearly that's all the Sky cared about. They didn't care about trying to get back into the game. All they cared about was maintaining her double-double streak, which I have to say, it seems like her teammates really like her, as compared to, I don't think Caitlin Clark's teammates really go to bat for her in some of these instances. So I don't know. Maybe she is a better teammate, or she certainly appears to be.
But I thought the whole thing was that WNBA players only do things like that to Caitlin Clark.
Do things like what?
Like actually play defense and don't let her get records and
oh,
stuff like
well,
that.
Oh, well, hey.
That was the narrative. Again, this has always happened to rookies forever.
Yeah.
Forever in the WNBA. But a lot of people just started watching the league, and they're like, why do they do this stuff to Caitlin? No, they do it to rookies a lot. And that's what they're doing. They should lock her down. They shouldn't let her get the double-double. They did exactly what they're supposed to do. But it happens to a lot of players, not just one.
We'll continue on this coming back. The Caitlin Clark fans are mad because of the mention that she has now set the single season WNBA turnovers record.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury,
it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Any time in the minor?
Cup of coffee.
Oh, okay.
About as time as you spent in the pre-show meeting.
No cigarette.
He went in, he hit it, I'm out.
Nice job by the Bass Sound Crew. Their ears were ringing during the break. I was talking about Paul Skeens, and then Paul Skeens related rejoin there.
Yeah.
Wow. It's almost like someone knew that was coming. That was Matt Barry on Get Up. Greeny's out. Damian Woody, football player, is in. And then Damian Woody said about Paul Skeens, like, he hadn't spent any time in the minors. And they're like, well, you know, he got a cup of coffee. And then Matt Barry takes a shot at him, like, hey, you come to the pre-show meeting, you might know something. I was like, whoa, okay. Damian Woody's like 6'4", 350 pounds. Like, relax, little guy. You like that?
Taking
a shot about no prep?
It was he spent as much time in the minors as you spend in pre-show meetings.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good way to
actually
nail it, because the delivery of the line was very good.
It was great.
I like it.
Yeah.
Call him out.
I like that, Matt Barry.
Well, also, when you're making, when you are making a mistake, on the air in terms of like not knowing that, they probably did talk about it before the show. Yeah. So like it is, hey, look, this is not something that you shouldn't have been unprepared for.
I don't want to get into I don't want to get into a prep conversation.
I'm guessing Damian Woody went to meetings with the Patriots.
I know. Do we want to go down this path about former athletes sometimes in prep that they don't treat it the same way they did during their career?
I mean, I think it's pretty obvious.
Yeah, I don't want to beat up on Damian Woody because I actually think he's one of the guys who does a pretty good job and is prepped. But in that case, got his chest busted. And, hey, you know what? You deserve it. Okay, so Angel Reese, double-double, streak is snapped. Liberty do what they had to do. And like, you know, you're not getting it. It's done. Yep. Adam is telling a story that, well, one, all-time turnover record for a season has been surpassed and new numbers are being set now by Caitlin Clark. You said some of the reaction has been what?
Well, I just want to preface it by saying Caitlin Clark has made huge strides since early in the season.
You don't have to preface.
No, it's important. Okay. It's important to the story. Okay. She's made huge strides. She's been playing better. The team's been playing a lot better. And by the way, guess what? Seems like they've been pretty well coached. Getting a lot better during the season. I don't know where that criticism has gone. Seems like it got grown pretty quiet. But she's made huge strides. Again, a pretty terrible shooting day the other day, but they won. So good there. So the fact that she has shown such improvement, she's going to be very good, that needs to be said. But there are things that are facts. And people can point out facts. Sporting News tweeted out. This is all they tweeted out. No commentary, nothing. Caitlin Clark now has the WNBA record for turnovers in a season with 139 with 15 games left to play. That is just a news fact. The outrage at this tweet is why I get so annoyed at this story. This is the people that I'm talking about. If you weren't irrelevant since the 80s, I'd unsubscribe to you now, but I already did 30 years ago. For pointing out you don't want facts? What about LeBron's turnovers? You never even mentioned those. She just set the record. When LeBron set the record for most turnovers in the NBA for a career, they tweeted that out too. He didn't do that yesterday. And it's LeBron over and over again. You're not even mentioning LeBron. How about LeBron? Point out LeBron's turnovers. Why? What are we doing right now? You're just mad nobody reads you anymore. Like, what are we doing right now? Why are you mad at a fact? These are the people that I get so annoyed with and why this story has driven me so nuts.
Adam, were you upset that Serena Williams went all racist during the ESPYs with Caitlin Clark saying that white people really like her?
I mean, that's a fact, right?
Is it?
I don't know.
I mean, is it? It's opinion. It's opinion.
It is opinion.
It's opinion.
It's opinion that's backed up by a lot of anecdotal.
By the way, on Friday, I countered. I was like, Adam Hill doesn't.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, anecdotal evidence from what? Social media? That's not true. The real world.
That's fair. No, that's fair. It's absolutely fair.
That whole analysis drives me crazy. And I don't know. The turnover thing's funny, but it's like I actually liked what Paul Pierce had to say about it. You know, he showed all the turnover leaders for the NBA and the WNBA, and they're all Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
Right?
It's because you get involved a lot. Well, you have the ball a lot in your hands. You make a lot of plays.
Like, yeah, so, course. I mean, I think the context that would be important for people who are maybe new to the game and don't watch a lot is turnover percentage. By a large context, most people rely on that as a good indicator of ball handling, and her turnover percentage is good. I mean, it's not tops. It's not the best in the league, but it's good.
But again, it is something to point out that midway through the season, she's already broken the record for most of the season. That is a lot of turnovers. Okay, that's a fact. There's context to it. There's layers to it. There's other things to explain it. This is just a fact.
Yeah.
Don't get mad at facts.
Well, you also have to acknowledge that when you choose to put out certain facts.
Why not just tweet out they won?
Right. But, okay. We can't act like there's not an agenda behind any of this, any facts going one way or the other, right? The agenda is to get this very engagement that they got. Why else would you put that on
there? Why would you tweet anything ever?
It's for engagement, right? Right, it's engagement farming. So,
if you got up and tweeted today is Monday,
right?
Like, I guess you didn't have to tweet that. You don't have to tweet anything. But then, I think there actually would be people getting mad at that somehow.
No, I think they would. There's a purpose behind every tweet, right? I mean, it's, in theory, especially from a journalistic standpoint, there's a purpose behind it. Clearly, there's a purpose behind this tweet, right?
I should also point out they did this tweet was sent out during the game,
right?
They tweeted out after the game that they won.
Yeah,
this tweet was during the game. They hadn't won yet, so why are you saying why not just tweet that they won?
But here's the thing. Like I think they got exactly what they wanted out of it. They wanted that engagement. So I don't know why, as a journalist, it would infuriate you, because you also can farm, manipulate, get engagement based on your takes of Caitlin Clark. All of a sudden, everybody's got takes on Caitlin Clark, you know, and why? Because people listen, people read when you do. They tweeted that because they knew people would go crazy about it. They put it in with 15 games left to go because they knew people would go crazy about it. They could have just said.
I just don't know why. At this point, I think we're just saying, why tweet anything ever?
I don't tweet anything ever.
But as a news outlet, like, you are supposed to tweet out when records happen, when things like this happen. Hey, this record was broken. Hey, right? This guy. Johnny Smith just set the rebound record.
Okay. Right.
Okay. Cool.
You don't think that they had any desire or agenda to get a lot of tweets out of, or a lot of engagement out of it?
I think they.
Of course they did. I mean, I'm that's why they put with 15 it. Games left, because it's a shot.
It's a shot. Literally just a fact.
I know it's a fact, but
I don't think facts can be shots.
You could have stated the fact of she just broke the single season record with 139.
Or you could have just not tweeted it.
Right. But you could have just said.
Why are we ignoring things that happen?
As an example, I could tweet 50 facts a day. I'm not tweeting facts that I don't think we'll get no reaction.
Exactly.
Simple as that.
That's right.
Why else would you do it? Things that happened today where I'm like, hey, I think that engagement might get people talking.
I'll put it this way. And there's a whole thing about attendance tweets last week. Literally every game at the Golden Knights, and you probably see it following all the people you follow.
Yep.
As soon as they announce attendance, which absolutely doesn't matter to anyone, 19 people in a row tweet it. No reason to. And it's not getting engagement.
No. Now you're fibbing.
Yeah.
No, because what do they usually tag it with? Often. And they said hockey wouldn't work in the desert. They're still doing it 7 years later. I'm like, all right.
But I mean,
it's working enough.
I don't think they know what these attendances are. Tonight's attendance is 20,041.
I like to know that.
I don't care. But I think that's why a lot of those people do it, especially the ones who've been on the beat.
But a lot of people don't even have – there's no – it's just tonight's attendance, 20,041. Tonight's 19,487.
Yeah.
And it just, okay, cool.
Now.
And then I just move on. All right.
Now,
but I don't think there's any engagement or anything. It's just a fact.
What if you do an attendance of the A's? Right? That's meant for engagement. Yeah. It's meant for engagement.
It's not just factual.
What if their attendance is 24,000, which is just a good night, not a great night, not a bad night.
I wouldn't tweet it.
Yeah, they wouldn't
tweet it. But they will. I think they will.
Maybe the A's will to flex muscle,
people
which is
like
pathetic.
People like to just tweet. There's a lot of times people just to tweet.
Yeah,
all right, let's move on to this. Yeah. Justin Watkins is in. Another WNBA point where people are going to get fired up. You send over Asia Wilson, number 90 on the ESPN Top 100 21st Century Athlete list. My response to that is, why isn't Asia Wilson popular or respected on the list? And they've only released 70 through 100. Cheryl Swoops is 81. Lauren Jackson is 84. Asia Wilson is 90. There will be other players like Sue Bird, like
Taurasi
on that list. My reaction is Asia Wilson probably should be higher. Why has she not gone over? You know, another thing I thought of this weekend. Vegas played in Washington at that mini arena, right?
Yeah.
How come they're not booking Vegas, the best team in the league, two times over, and the best player in the league in the big building?
Was it also like a morning game?
Come on, Adam. Because you couldn't do noon at the whatever the big arena is in Washington, or move it to 5 or 7.
Probably because it won't sell out. I mean, that's the thing. But why
haven't people embraced her? And I'm not. I don't know how they came up with this list. I got to look into this before we start getting all, because that's why they're doing this. ESPN again wants engagement. This is an opinion of the top 100.
I mean, from my perspective, I think she's probably already – this is 21st century athletes, so it's only from 2000 on, right? Cheryl Swoops is ahead of her, even though much of her accomplishments happened before 2000. But okay. I think it's a pretty safe bet to say Asia Wilson is going to go down as the greatest WNBA player of all time. She might already be there. She might already be there. The people who are already on the list above her, she has just as many accomplishments as.
Right.
In what, 6 years? She already has the championships. She already has the Defensive Player of the Year, the MVPs. So she's already there. I don't know. But that's the question. Yeah. Why isn't she respected?
We'll build on this. This is also the design of this list as well to get people fired up. I'm sure there's lots of points like this throughout the top 100.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN, Las Vegas, and ESPN, Reno.
You faced, obviously, you were in the Nolan Ryan era.
No.
What, not even an inning?
Slow down. Slow down. No, I was way after Nolan.
Way after Nolan. Okay.
That's pretty demonstrative. By Derek Jeter. So Derek Jeter at All-Star, whatever this is, week, talking to Colin Cowherd, and Cowherd said, hey, obviously you were from the Nolan Ryan era. I actually would have thought they had crossed over.
Yeah, was it about 4 years?
3 years.
Yep.
Well, Ryan was done.
93,
yep. Yeah. And Jeter was up in
96.
96.
Three-year difference, but also to say the era insinuates like they overlapped quite a bit. Like,
yeah,
not
no,
that they
I agree.
Would have faced
yeah.
each other one
yeah.
time.
Yeah.
So it's,
you realize
it's pretty
what,
bad.
What puts it in perspective, you would know that offhand?
No, but I wouldn't have prefaced the question with someone I didn't know.
Nolan Ryan's 77 years old. I was like, he's probably like 70 now.
No but way, he paid, dude. He pitched when he was 50.
He pitched so long. It's crazy. Totally crazy. So there you go. More mistakes in broadcasting. Media! Can't keep everything in these domes. I forget stuff, too. I'm standing up for Colin a little bit. Okay, receiver. I know Adam's watched the whole thing. Do you watch the whole thing?
I watched the whole thing.
I haven't watched the whole thing.
How long did it take?
Oh, I got it done.
It's like one night?
No. It was all over the weekend.
Okay.
I was on two flights.
Oh, okay.
So,
perfect.
Yeah.
The same thing's happening to me in receiver that happened in quarterback. I got tired of a couple of subject matters in quarterback, and I bailed, and I'm getting tired of a subject matter, although I know it. I mean, I have to watch it to see the completion. What do you think it is? It's Raider related. I don't think Davante Adams is coming off well. And I'm guessing he's definitely not. I'm guaranteeing Adam will say it's fine. Well, in terms of not coming off well, he's obviously – you see him complaining a lot about the Raiders.
Yeah.
So is this more – yeah, you know what? He needs to call out the Raiders. They are dysfunctional at times, or this guy just seems like not a great team player.
I think there's both. I think there's room for both of that those things. I mean, he clearly thought that Josh McDaniels was not a good coach and ran a good program. So that's number one. I mean, I love the show because, you know, in fantasy, I'm a receiver hawk. I love to go after the receivers. That's
You're
where I pay my money.
Not getting any of these guys this year.
Yeah. So, no, I don't. Well, now it's about who I don't want. You know, it's about learning about those players and who I don't want that was interesting to me. But, I mean, I think from my perspective, clearly Davante Adams came off the worst of the whole bunch. No doubt about that. I think he came off as prioritizing his career over the success of a franchise, and that's fine, but if that was the case, he picked the wrong team to come to. Like, did you think you were going to win a championship with the Raiders in the first 3 years? Because if you did, you had some real bad advice. I mean, I don't think anybody thought that the Raiders were a receiver away from being a championship team. And so I really don't think he came off very well. I think Amon-Ra came off great. I thought Justin Jefferson came off great. I actually thought...
I want you to hold that for a second.
Yeah.
Let Adam address Adams in the final minute here before we go to the next block.
I mean, I feel like I'm way too close. This is what I talked about last week.
Yep.
Like I'm there for all of those moments with Davante. I'm talking to him, you know, a couple times a week. I was there through all those moments, and I was feeling for him through the episode. It was a really, really tough year. It is probably not the year that he would have chosen to highlight in his career,
right,
if he had a choice. I mean, he did, he agreed to it, but I think he had higher expectations maybe, which might have been silly. But yeah, I just think that is a tough year to judge somebody on when they're going through one of the biggest struggle years of their career in terms of three different quarterbacks, none of them are good, a coach that is a lame duck basically, all that other stuff. And he is at a different point in his career than the other guys, where he's near the end, where those guys are kind of near the beginning.
Well, Kittle's not near the beginning of his career. I mean, yeah. So I mean, they're on.
He also was on a Super Bowl team.
Super Bowl team. Yeah. That's right. So I just think he came off poorly. I'm not saying he is a bad dude. I don't know him at all, but just he was not portrayed well.
One, two, get down.
Now back to Justin Watkins with Cofield and Company on ESPN. Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
We're at the Battleborne Broadcast Center. If you need legal advice, we don't just do podcasts here. There's a whole firm. They do a lot of good. Justin Watkins is here, but give him a call at 766-1400. Dial 775 in the north. Office is in Reno, downtown Vegas, Vegas. And Henderson, we were just talking about receiver. Trying not to give you a ton of spoilers. I don't think we've gotten anything super specific. The whole season's out. Not everyone can watch the whole season like you guys did right away. You were talking. We were talking about Davante Adams and how he's coming off. But you're okay. You kind of understand that. You said you weren't in on someone, maybe for fantasy football. Right. The only guys you didn't name on air were Kittle and Debo. So one of those?
I mean, I think I'm I would take any of those guys, but not at an elevated level. I think I'm probably out on Devontae, although I think Minshew might be able to do something. We'll see.
From the bench?
Yep. We'll see. That's the problem.
I know. We're just going to be dealing with that. But I just, from an overall character standpoint, I thought they picked some really good people who really love the game of football. I think that came really across from Justice Jefferson. From everybody else, I mean, clearly Devontae didn't love the game that season, and maybe he loves the game otherwise and all that stuff. But the other ones were like, you would think specifically Justin Jefferson, and, you know, try not to give away spoilers, but like he got injured during the season. And
twice.
It was his contract year, and he still wanted to get in there. I like that. I actually thought, from a personality standpoint, we were talking off air, I love the Devontae and Justin Jefferson mutual respect. They watch each other's films get better. I thought Kittle was a good personality to put on there. He's very different than all the other people. I thought he was entertaining. I think there's some witchcraft to his personality, I think, but I on some of it I'm in on, you know, like I could dig some of that stuff that he's doing. And then I liked St. Brown's family. I thought they sort of stole the show.
Yeah, it's a
in
great
a way.
Story.
Yeah.
Yeah, John Brown is it's a great story.
His dad's a lunatic, and he always has been, but he almost is like a lunatic that's willing to understand that he's so over the top.
Oh,
like,
yeah, he gets it.
That he's over the top.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's telling him to drink a soda. Yeah. Drink a soda. Yeah. Coca-Cola. Telling you, drink the Coke. Like, all right.
I don't think that's gonna be the magic elixir. I don't know what's going on here.
It was great.
A little college football before we get Justin out of here. So our 5 o'clock hour's on the way. A lot more on the Raiders and some of those storylines. And we do want to get into Fresno State losing their coach, Jeff Tedford. So he's going to step aside again for health reasons. My God. We'll have to take a look at the schedule next week. I got some interesting feedback on Washington State and Oregon State from a lot of the players and coaches coming into the conference. Of course, I also presented every time like, yeah, they think they're going to come in here and run roughshod over you guys. And every one of them is like, whoa, okay. So the way you ask a question, I'll admit, can affect the answer. Rumors now, Clemson and Florida State to the Big 12. Do you think Yermak is really trying to make a move and force the hand of these schools? Sankey said today, right?
I'm not a recruiter.
Right.
Okay. Doesn't mean he's not picking up the phone if somebody calls.
Exactly.
Do you think the Big 12 is going to force the SEC's hand, or can the Big 12, kind of like it did with the Pac-12, just make the early move and win the battle?
I would be surprised if FSU and Clemson go to the Big 12. I don't think I think it makes the Big 12 look good to put a story out there that's going to happen. I would be really surprised if it happened. I'm just looking from the Oregon State perspective. If that does happen, I think Oregon State will be better off. Wherever, maybe they're part of an ACC, maybe some of the Western schools come back to a pack that gets rebuilt. I don't know. I think they're in a better spot if some of those schools start making moves. If the SEC takes a couple, if the Big Ten takes a couple, and if the Big 12 takes a couple, we're either in an ACC or we might round out a 24 conference Big 12. So I think Oregon State, Washington State, which had their own little mini media day here, I think they're saying the right things. They're not going to make any decisions. There's too much realignment going on, and we got to sit back and see what happens, and I think that's the right move. So I don't think they're a great fit. I think the Big 12 would love to have them, but I think that they have their eyes set higher. I don't think that the FSU and Clemson think that the Big 12 is better than the ACC. And they're probably right.
I think a lot of it's a power move, too, to flex muscle. And your Max, like, yeah, ACC, Big 12.
Yeah.
We're stronger than you guys. We'll take your top teams. We'll take your top schools.
Right. I mean, it's about building their brand more than it is about, like, factually what is actually going to happen.
I was going to point out the pride and the academic standards of Clemson and Florida State, but I don't think that's going to fly. Because I wanted to go back to what Mike Gundy said last week. And I did a little rant. I'm like, that's what Oklahoma State is. Sorry.
Yeah.
And that's what their fans are fine with it. Like, I mean, what'd you make of what he said? Because the weird part was, then he's starting to do, like, you know, body mass and beers drinking, drank, as I'm talking about educational standards, with this running back. And he's like, I, you know, 3-4 beers, I've done that 1,000 times and driven. Like, wait, what?
I think it's embarrassing. Yeah. Like,
if you're an Oklahoma State fan.
I still think it's embarrassing. Really? And I think he was embarrassed by it because he put out his clarifier, like, right afterwards. He put out a tweet. It was like, the point I was trying to make is, like, right. I was trying to make a greater point. It was not actually factual. You know, I think he was embarrassed by it. And he should be. It's embarrassing.
But he's embarrassed him, like, 5 times over the years. Yeah. That's who they have.
Right.
They like him.
Well, they like winning.
Right.
Personality aside.
And I don't think there's, like, a ton of schools out there, especially if their coach is winning, that would be like, this is horrendous.
I agree.
We got to get rid of this guy.
I mean,
I don't know if Michigan had Mike Gundy and he made statements like that, there might be a lot of bluster around the Michigan community. Would they blow him out if he was winning?
What's his record?
Yeah, right? I mean, I think there's a handful of schools that would make a move but overall about the personality of a person and whether or not that they reflect the values of the institution. I'm thinking like Notre Dame, Stanford, are probably schools that they don't need football to succeed, right? Their endowments are so amazingly huge that, you know, the profit share here and there on football does not make or break their institution. So I think but after that, I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. I don't know if there's very many.
How about
Notre Dame would get rid of him if he's winning?
I don't. They have made changes in the past, though, based on, you know, embarrassment. Like they do value the perception of their morals and code of conduct. I think BYU would. I do think BYU would. I think they take their code of conduct pretty seriously.
If it gets public.
If a BYU coach said he's 1,000 times had 3 beers.
Yeah, he's probably gone.
He's probably gone. That's trouble.
Yeah.
That's trouble. All right, how about Mike Gundy saying he's not going to suspend Ollie Gordon at all? Well, because, you know, it's kind of different now. He's an employee. He gets paid. There's a certain responsibility. I didn't get that was like his opening thing.
Garbage.
I don't even get why it's different.
Yeah.
I don't believe it's the first time he's getting paid.
Right.
Two, now that they're employees and it's above board, now you have a different level of responsibility to the rest of the team and the community?
Yeah, I would think that would heighten your responsibility to the community, not diminish your responsibility to the community. Like, if you're being paid to represent these...
Have you seen him
run? Right,
it's exactly. Really good.
Yeah, and Oklahoma State fans definitely do not care. They are not embarrassed by it at all. They whatever. They're all on board with it, so... You know, he's in the right place for that kind of stuff.
And you, like, want Oregon State aligned with Oklahoma State, huh? Okay.
I want Oregon State to get in any of the Power
Four.
Like,
I do not care.
we
they do what
there.
They do.
Yeah.
Just give me the money, please. It's the only way to survive.
But I do want the Oregon State coach to have values. Like, that would affect me as I'm a very, very low level contributor to Oregon State athletics. But if we had a coach like that I was embarrassed about, I absolutely would pull whatever little funding I put. And I actually think a lot of Oregon Staters are that way, but they're also, we don't have big boosters. So it's like,
well, you know, it's interesting going back to BYU. I think unless it had gotten blown up, and especially blown up because apparently Blake Anderson kind of terrorized the kid. There's a whole sexual assault thing going on, and investigation moved along slowly. And, you know, one of the football players said something, and then Blake Anderson threatened him for, you know, suggesting, hey, maybe the truth is important. So, sorry, Logan. That didn't look good.
Yep. Well, it looked good for the player. I mean, at least the player's standing up for the values of why he went to an institution that he thought carried those values. Yep. So I think it's more likely you would see that at a BYU and a Utah State than, say, Oregon State or UNLV, like the two schools that I follow, right? I don't know that they promote sort of an ethical code as a part of who they are and the fabric of what they are. You know, they have their own community standards and all that stuff, but those schools really promote it.
I want to look up the exact quote along these lines. You just said the kid at Utah State did the right thing. Did you see Harrison Butker trying to go back at Serena Williams for the Williams sisters kind of busting his chops that, you know, you don't need to be part of women's sports, Harrison?
Yeah.
And he fired back, basically kind of turned it on him like, oh, I guess you're not about inclusion and you're turning away supporting other athletes. I was like, dude, don't weaponize this. Just put down your sword and walk away and remain in the NFL. This army of especially women online is not one you want to fight.
Oh, it's absolutely something he wants to fight. I'm not saying I want to be a part of that fight, but have you seen his following online now?
Oh, so he has a whole army behind him.
He's got his own army. The attacks that went after Serena Williams based on, like, how could you take this night that was supposed to be dedicated to sports and get into politics? And it's like, how could you take this night that was supposed to be dedicated to graduates and turn it into politics? Exactly. It's like, I don't know, you know, like, he's got a First Amendment right to speak his mind. So does she. Right? Like, that's where the First Amendment gets tough. You got to hear the stuff you don't want to hear, too. You know, like,
sports are supposed to be a great unifier.
Yep.
I mean, in theory, yeah. But
also, it's award shows are usually about entertainment and jokes. It was a joke.
Yeah.
That too.
Like, okay. What are we doing here?
I got no problem
with what it's about.
I actually have no problem with either of them. I don't have a problem with him saying what he said, and I don't have a problem with her saying what she said.
You don't think Serena going after Butker then loses some of its effect with her joke about Caitlin and her fans, her white fans? You don't think that diminishes the message about Butker and yay women when she sort of threw another woman under the bus?
I mean, I think, like, to Adam's point, part of the night is about jokes. So you got to, you know, sort of walk the edge a little bit. I'll just say, like, I mean, I know I'm not a typical fan in this way, but it didn't affect me either way.
I don't think Harrison Butker was joking.
Right, he definitely was not.
He was making a statement.
Yes.
But I'm saying at the speech, like, he wasn't joking.
Yes,
he was making a declaration that, you know, he's free to say, but I will judge him as being awful for it. But it wasn't a joke.
Last one, last 20 seconds. Number one pick in the baseball draft, Major League Baseball draft, Travis Bezanna.
Yeah,
second baseman.
First second baseman ever taken number one overall in the draft.
His numbers look ridiculous.
He's awesome. I mean, he should win the Golden Spike Award. Did they already give that out? I don't know. He was one of the front runners to win it. I think he's Pac-12 Player of the Year 2 years running. Awesome player. They're projecting they're probably going to move him to the outfield, though.
28 homers. I think he had 70 walks and 39 strikeouts. So contact guy, really good eye. All right.
For 425 batting average or something, well into the fours?
Decent.